It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Farm to Table Talk boils down to good stories about the people who farm and a public who literally enjoys and trusts the fruits of their efforts. There are sometimes stories behind the stories, and fortunately, some of those stories become movies. The inspiration and the journey of a tragic accident in a corn bin in the Midwest has led to creation of a film that is described as a meditation on life in a small Midwest town, disrupted by a grain entrapment and subsequent introspection by a young farmer and a high school senior about the risks and rewards of a corn farmer's life. We welcome the filmmaker, director of Silo, Edge of the Real World, Marshall Burnett. We have a lot to talk about. Let's start first with, why are you a filmmaker?
That's a good question that I think I'm trying to figure out every day. I love, I've always been creative, I guess I would say. I used to play a lot of music when I was younger, kind of explored any creative route I could, photography, things like that. And I feel like I've always been the type of guy that's good at a lot of things, but not amazing at one thing. And filmmaking is kind of perfect for that, because especially, you know, producing or directing, your job is to multitask. Your job is to oversee hundreds of different things going on at the same time. And by the end of the day, it's kind of a culmination of all the different art forms that I've always been interested in. So you get to, you know, play with visuals, with photography, with filming images, and you can put music to it, and the story, the writing element. So it's you know, it's the culmination of everything in one. And you know, I'm just obsessed with movies. I love good films, and when I see a great one, I get hungry and a little jealous.
So have you had your hands on all the elements of the filmmaking? I mean, have you been the person that's actually operating a camera and written the scripts and done the editing and picked the story out and all of the elements of it? Have you been involved?
I have, actually, yeah. So, I mean, there's a million different ways to get into the industry, as they call it. I was fortunate. I was in my hometown. I wasn't working in film or anything. I was actually working at an outfitter. So we sold, you know, firearms and camping gear and things like that. And I met a guy in there that his company made commercials for the retailer I was working at. And I used to do some mountain biking, things like that, and just film it for fun. And he overheard me talking about it. And I needed an editor. So by the next weekend, I had a job as, you know, a filmmaker. We were doing hunting shows and fishing shows and regional kind of sports television things. And I had to learn, you know, do a lot of filming, holding the camera, filming a lot, learning a lot about editing. And it was a good crash course. And since then, we've got to, you know, I've got to pay the bills somehow. And a lot of that comes from doing other jobs. So, being the cameraman, the operator, or editing somebody else's work or something like that. So I've definitely dabbled in pretty much all the different corners of filmmaking. And my end-all goal is to be a writer-director, which knowing about editing, knowing about the camera, knowing about sound, knowing a little bit about everything comes in very handy in directing, because typically I'm the person asking all those people underneath me, you know, what to do, or telling them what I need from them. So
this
has been a big help.
This all started back in, was it Eastern Tennessee? I think you were near the Virginia border of Eastern Tennessee.
Right. Yeah. I grew up in Johnson City, Tennessee, the Tri-Cities area. So Kingsport, Johnson City, Bristol. Bristol, Virginia, of course, is known for the fastest half mile, the NASCAR track. It's a pretty rural place. You know, I grew up in actually a little town in the middle of it called Gray. I lived in a little neighborhood, but I was surrounded by tobacco and cattle farms, basically.
Did you know farmers?
So I did. I went to school with a handful of them. A good friend owned a farm. Another friend in my class, his father was the largest strawberry producer within four or five states, I believe, in that area. And if you gotta, if you're gonna grow up and hang out on a farm, some strawberry farm is a pretty fun, you know, tasty place to do it.
So you have that background, and then you started pursuing this career as a filmmaker and doing all these things. When did you start thinking that sometimes you would do a film that involved farming or farmers somehow?
That's a good question. I never directly planned on it. I knew, I've always loved where I grew up, the people I know, the culture. I love rural communities. I love blue collar filmmaking. Is a very expensive thing to do, of course, and that's why so much of it exists in New York and L.A. and in bigger cities where there's money to be found and to be invested in things like this. But I've always loved films and novels about small communities, about real people getting their hands dirty. And I knew I wanted to make those types of films. I knew I wanted to tell stories of rural areas, of real people that you don't hear their stories much. The connection with this film was actually the inspiration came from an NPR that I heard one night that told the story of a grain entrapment accident in Mount Carroll, Illinois, in 2010. I didn't grow up much around corn. Definitely drove by plenty of grain bins and silos my whole life. But I didn't know the danger was present, and I didn't know these things happened. And that NPR story really moved me. It scared me, and I researched it more. I got online. I learned about all this, you know, all the history of this and how easily it can happen and how many accidents there are a year. And every story, they all had something in common, which was that these accidents affected a lot of people in a tightly knit community. And I thought that would make a great film and tell a great story. It's kind of to see this group of people come together in a hard time and how a town, you know, one person can be in trouble and everybody can, you know, is hungry to come to their aid. I thought that was really powerful. So I think that was the first inspiration that made me want to learn about this world.
You know, I think it's fascinating where inspirations come from like that, because you, like, driving home from work or just doing something else and listening to the radio, and then this NPR story comes on, and then it stuck with you for how long?
It was a long time.
Was it a couple of years?
Yeah, it was, actually. It was, I was filming a short film. I was directing a short film about 4 years ago, a little more than 4 years ago now. And we were driving, I was driving home to my apartment that night, and it was about 2 a.m., and this NPR piece came on. And I remember texting my good friend who is my cinematographer. So he's the head of the camera department, does all the camera technical and all the lighting. And I remember texting him and saying that I just heard this story. And I said, you know, there might be a movie here. And that was about 4.5 years ago now. After that, I would say there was a good year and a half when I just thought about it a lot. I watched any sort of, you know, videos on YouTube I could, researched it online, and I just knew there was something there, but I didn't really know what it was yet. It probably took a year and a half until it kind of made sense in my head how the story could go, how a film could be made about this. And that's when, through some a connection of some friends, I met Samuel Goldberg and Elon Ulmer, who are the producers on the project and good friends with me. And they're actually from up in New York City. I told Dylan this movie I wanted to make, and since then, we've been working on it as a team.
You know, I'm still just awestruck by this vision of you driving at 2 o'clock in the morning, hearing this, and then having it stick with you for a few years before you can finally act on it and pull all the elements together. And we're going to talk about pulling all those elements together, but now I go back even further and think of somebody at NPR that actually did that story and thought it was important. And then thinking that nobody's going to hear it at 2 o'clock in the morning, that's going to make any difference in their life. And a few years later, somebody actually makes a movie, and thousands of people are going to see it. And it's drawing attention to an issue and to a point of view and a community spirit and something about farming and something about safety that, again, whoever did that first story should get some credit. You ought to go back and check who that was.
No, I was just going to say, I pull up that segment every now and then and re-listen to it.
Is that right? So, you kept it?
Yeah, it was a story. You might have heard the story. I think it was a big headline story for this subject because it involved three teenage boys mm-hmm. that were at a large industrial operation. They went inside the bin to walk the corn, and the supervisor did not know they were in there. So this accident actually happened by somebody turning the auger on, not knowing that these boys were inside the bin. One of them survived, and two of them passed away. The two that passed away, they sank below the surface quickly and could not be saved. The third one, the grain settled and the auger was shut off before his head went under. So they were able to use a grain tube and the procedures and practices that rescue teams are using to do this now in order to pull him out. It was a big story because it wasn't an air pocket under the grain that did this. It was another employee, a supervisor that turned the auger on. And that was one of the things that captivated me, was the idea that when something bad happens like this, whatever type of accident it is, victims and victims' families look for somebody to blame. Everybody wants somebody to pin it on and blame. And I always thought about that supervisor, the one that turned the auger on, that was just doing his job and was not alerted that there was somebody in there, and how easy it would be for somebody to blame him. But at the same time, you can't blame him for this. And I always, his story in particular, it gets in your nerves a little bit. It's complicated. I mean, complicated stories make good film and good stories. So.
Well, and those stories make you remember them 3 years later when you're finally able to put that concept down. And when you are sharing the idea, now is your way of doing this, do you sit down at your laptop and start writing it, or you outline it, you whiteboard it? How do you take the concept into those early stages of saying, this is the film I want to make?
Right. I think it's different for a lot of filmmakers. I have trouble sitting down and writing something unless I kind of see it from beginning to end in my head. So I'm definitely a big brainstormer and daydreamer. So I think about it a lot. I kind of like dream about it per se and just kind of imagine this movie and what it could be. And after thinking about it enough, it just constantly being a thought in my head, you know, at some point it clicked and I was like, okay. The film could work like this. We can go kind of into more detail about what that is, but I kind of have the vision or the idea of a 2-hour movie would start and end like this and could really work. And then at that point, I just started telling everybody about it. I guess if you tell the right people and they think, oh, that could be really cool, I want to see that, they go tell other people too. And that's how I ended up meeting Sam and his partner, Alon.
Sometime does it get just converted to print, though? Does it become a script?
It does, exactly, yes. So we spent, as a team, me, a great screenwriter in New York named Jason Williamson. He's a farm boy from North Carolina that lives in New York now. And the two of us worked with the help of Sam Goldberg and Alon. We all worked together for about 2 years on a screenplay. So that means a feature-length screenplay is, they like to say that one page equals 1 minute of screen time. So for an hour and a half movie, it's about a 90-page. You write one draft. There's some things you like about it, and you just rewrite and rewrite and rewrite. So for 2+ years, we kind of did that process. And we're still doing it, you know. We're still making it better and better and better, getting rid of things, fixing things, changing things. Sometimes you even write something that would just be too expensive to put on screen, right?
Yeah.
So you have to make all those considerations.
And you don't have the long film out yet and finished. You've got a short film that was able to be shown at Tribeca, and Tribeca is one of the most prestigious film festivals, I think, in the world, and there's a handful of the thousands that apply to be shown at Tribeca, and you got selected to show your short film, which is a little over 10 minutes at Tribeca. That's quite an honor.
Right. Thank you. It was very cool to be able to do that. But you're right. Yes. So the plan for years was to make a 2-hour narrative theatrical movie with actors and production value, and make a real movie and tell this story. I always like to tell people there's a lot of movies that take place on farms, and I feel like half of them are probably romantic comedies, but there are very few movies that are about the act of farming. One of the big ones that stands out is The River, the film with Sissy Spacek and Mel Gibson, which was about an East Tennessee couple trying to protect their farmland from a river flooding into it. Mm-hmm. And you actually learned about the process of farming and the struggle. And I thought, it's been a long time since a movie like that's been made. I thought it would be great. And that was the original plan. But then comes the step of raising a lot of money to make these things, because it's very expensive to make a movie. We were trying to figure out the best route to go about doing this. I think it was probably Sam that said, hey, well, let's go make something else while we're pursuing this, while we're working on it. A lot of people do a thing that's called a proof of concept. And what that is they might take one scene out of their screenplay or out of their movie, and they go make that scene, and then they use that to help raise money. They say, here, look what we can do. This is the tone. This is kind of what it will look like. And I didn't want to do that, because I didn't want to go make what I call the B version of the A version that's in my head. So I told Sam, I said, I think it would be really cool and educational for the audience and for us as the filmmakers to go do a short documentary that's not the exact story as our 2-hour long feature film, but introduces an audience to this idea and to similar people that are in our story. And that's where we kind of started and got this idea to, let's go make this 10-minute documentary about a corn farming community and about the dangers that exist there.
You know, you mentioned that you want to get the tone right, and I thought it was interesting. You have on your website, you had a quote from one of the Coen brothers, I think, that said, directing is tone management. I'd never seen that before.
Yeah.
And I love that. And then in describing your film, the short film, too, The Silo at Edge of the Real World, you describe it as a meditation on life in a small Midwest town. I think it's really interesting. The tone, the meditation, the flavor, the feel, the environment of capturing what it's like in a community like that.
Yes, for me, those are the films that always attract me, is ones that have a very intentional and strong tone. When you watch a movie and you can say, whoever made this knew this emotion they wanted me to feel. That's what I really connect with a lot, and I want to make films like that. And I knew we could make a documentary that has narrator going throughout, just reading the statistics and do something very educational like that. But I wanted to see if I could do a little bit of both and make something educational and eye-opening, but almost just create an atmosphere and a tone to where you sympathize with these people. You feel what a day in the life is like, and you feel the ups and downs and all those different things. I think if the audience can connect with that emotion and the tone of a character in a place, then they're interested and they want to come back for more. And hopefully they say, wow, this is fascinating. I'd like to see the whole thing.
Well, you know, Marshall, one thing that strikes me is that all these little communities have different tones. You know, that if you're going to look to create a special tone or like a film that's almost a meditation of life in that area, that farming community, how did you pick one out?
That one was definitely a little bit of luck. Very fortunate. It was a friend, a connection through my wife. We told her what I was trying to do, and she said, you know what, I grew up in this little town in Indiana. I've got a buddy you should talk to. He sounds a lot like a character in your screenplay. And that was Adam Fox. I think he was 29 when we shot this. He's 30 now. He's about the same age as me. He runs with him and his father, kind of jointly own this corn farm operation in Rising Sun, Indiana. They're amazing people, very, very humble. And I hadn't been on too many farms yet, other than doing some research trips and driving around, meeting people, saying hello, learning how the equipment worked. I hadn't been on too many yet. Adam, you know, he kept telling me when I was meeting with him that, oh, this is, you know, this is nothing we do. This is fine. It's small. But he was just, I learned very quickly that he was being very humble. Everybody else I met in the town says, oh, man, that operation is very nice. It's very large, and it's him and his father and a good friend that, and with the help of some harvest hands during harvest time that run this very large operation. It worked out great. We told them what we wanted to do, and I think the awareness element of these grain entrapments and these accidents was captivating to him, and he wanted to help with it. And then he became our source in this town and introduced us to Clay Althoff, who's the high school senior in the film, and to the Aurora Fire Department, who has a scene in this.
So
one of the things
got...
I love about small towns is everybody can introduce you to somebody else, and everybody wants to help. It's great.
And you also have some examples of a 911 call and seeing a reaction and seeing training by people on dealing with farm emergencies. Was that done locally as well?
It was. The Aurora Fire Department, who's the town right next to Rising Sun, they actually have the closest grain tube to the Fox Farm, which is relatively close, about 20, 25 minutes away from them. You know, in an accident, though, 25 minutes is not close enough, which is wild. And the Aurora Fire Department even told us that they have the only grain tube in maybe a 100-mile radius. But we talked to them, and their chief sounded very interested, and they came over one morning to the Fox Farm, and, you know, it worked out great. You have to be certified to use this grain tube. You have to go through the correct training to get the paperwork. And he said their department doesn't have that training and that certification. So he said if they were to get a call of a grain entrapment and went and rescued the farmer with the grain tube, he said that they would have to pay a fine for using that equipment without the correct certification. He said, of course they would do it, no question asked, but the ironic thing about it is that legally, they're not even allowed to use it, which I thought was fascinating. This adds to the complexity of the issue.
Well, you know, I didn't realize till I looked online that there have been so many deaths in grain bins, too. It's like over 1,000, and I've seen accidents of all sorts of farmers over the years. I know farmers that don't have arms and don't have legs, and I've known of farmers that have died in, you know, tractor rollovers. It's a dangerous profession.
It is. That's one of the things that caught me was about an average of 30 Americans a year die in a grain bin. Or I don't want to speak wrongly, it'd be in confined spaces, which is,
sure.
I don't know if you've ever spoken with him or know of him, but Professor Bill Field of Purdue is the foremost expert on the subject. Very, very smart guy. He actually publishes the yearly reports for the Department of Agriculture about accidents in confined spaces. And that's where the statistics in our film came from. And he's a great source for all these things. But that is basically his life dedication is he does detailed reports on all of these accidents, and he works very hard to try to make a difference, pass legislation to help, you know, curb these accidents. But it does. It happens a lot more than you'd think. I thought when I was listening to that NPR piece for the first time that it was a freak accident that is the only time it's happened. And quickly I learned, oh my, this happens. It happens a lot. And this was just one example.
Well, you know, Marshall, you have a really tight concept, and cinematography is really terrific. And the music was great, too. That those two components, in addition to the good story we're talking about, really helped make an excellent film, I would think.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's hard to make a good movie for that reason. There's so many little pieces, and it takes a long time to do it. But, I've got a great friend. His name's Dustin Lane. He's a fantastic cinematographer. He's from Chattanooga, Tennessee area. Now he lives in Los Angeles. He's got a nice career going for him now, and he's super talented, and we collaborated on it. And we actually decided to try to add to the tone, to the atmosphere of the film and the feeling, we decided to actually shoot film for part of it. So some of the scenes are a digital camera, which are more popular now, of course. But we took an old 16mm film camera, and all the documentary footage with Adam and Clay, we actually filmed with old 16mm film. I love the way that feels. It feels grainy and dirty, and I feel like it helps the audience kind of get in this world and kind of get their hands dirty a little bit with the guys.
So when you guys move into town, what did you get? Do you have a Holiday Inn on the edge of town or something that is your base of operation for while you're there shooting?
We did one step better. We had a riverboat casino down the road from the farm. So we stayed at the riverboat casino, and
which is on the Ohio River, right? Because you're so close to
it is
to the border for right. Southeast Indiana.
Right. Yeah, we were right across the river from Kentucky.
You get up early. Get up at sunbreak. Get the right light.
Yep. Exactly. It's tough. So there's two ways to do it. If you have the money and the time, you can bring the lighting and recreate a look. But if you're moving quick, and especially in a documentary, when you don't have the time, you're trying to capture things when they happen, all you have is the time of day and praying and hoping for some good weather. So that's what we did. We got up before sunrise every day. We would film while the sun is low in the sky, which is always a little more low contrast and pretty. We would take a little break in the middle of the day and then come back in the evening and film into night. Did that for a few days. Definitely pretty exhausting. Kind of, making a film is a lot of prep, a lot of talk, a lot of prep, and then a sprint when you just work.
When you leave the farm, you leave that small community. I'm curious what feelings you left with as you're pulling out of town. How do you feel it might, that whole experience and working with that community and those farmers, how did it affect you? I mean, how do you feel you are kind of changed, or you and your crew, from having that experience of being there and making a film with them?
Yeah, well, the crew that worked on it with me is mostly going to be the similar crew that works on our full-length movie. So this was actually a great research trip for us. It was a way for us to go through a crash course of learning the process, the entire in the ground and the harvest and the entire process of corn farming. We all learned a lot about that. I just learned a lot from it, which was great. I remember talking to Clay, the high school student, on the phone before we came up there, and I said, you know, we'd love to come to your school and film school a little bit. And I said, you think that would be okay if you let one of your teachers know? It would be all right if we come get a shot of you in class. And I was really intending to just get a shot of him in class and show Clay in school. And we got there, and Clay said, yeah, my ag teacher has an entire farm safety presentation planned for you. And this wasn't planned or anything. And it became one of my favorite scenes. I think one of the most educational scenes in the film. And he, you know, taught these students farm safety and confined space safety. And those are all those happy accidents that we didn't plan for, but we get there. So coming away from it, it's so much work in a few days where you're just, you get something and you move on to the next thing. You're not thinking about what you just did too much. So on the way back, it's really collecting everything and going, and you're kind of comparing what you got to what you planned to get, you know, the month before. So it was wow. Well, we didn't, you know, you're saying, well, we didn't get this, but we got this, and this is probably twice as good. This would probably make for a way better moment. So it was just one of those films that worked out. The people were great. And the crew was great, and everybody was curious about the subject, I think, which so far everybody has been very curious about this. This is something that, like you said, like that NPR piece, that somebody puts it out there, and who knows if anybody's going to care. We've been pretty overwhelmed with the amount of interest and support and curiosity from people in the ag industry and ag towns to people in the coastal cities that have never, you know, been around a farm at all. They're all very interested in this story that they've never heard before.
So now, what about making a longer film, the full-length film? Are you going to start that?
We are. We have started it. We have been working very hard on it. It's a tough one, you know? If we were filming a movie that's, you know, let's say a couple characters that just have a lot of conversations, we could probably shoot that any time of year, but we're making this movie about a corn farming accident that happens around harvest time, which means we got to shoot it around harvest time. We're not going to plant our own corn and build our own farm, so we have to team up with a farmer in an operation who wants to be a partner on this and let us film this movie on their property, potentially around the time that they're harvesting. So we've been doing a lot of work on that this year, and we've decided to shoot the film next year, which means we're about a year away from filming. So we'll have some time to work on the script, but I'd say about 6 months before we're ready to shoot the camera, that's when we start putting our crew together, and that's when we start reaching out to actors to cast the movie. That's when things start getting really busy. We start doing a lot of location scouting, and it takes about 1 to 2 months of 5 or 6 days a week, you know, 12 hours a day filming to shoot a movie. So that's a lot of days to plan for.
Have you picked the area that you're going to be in where the farms will be this time?
Right now, we have been working in and around the LaRue County region of Kentucky. Kentucky's great. Kentucky's amazing. So I worked on a friend's movie in Kentucky a couple years ago, and it was the first time I really worked on a project up there. And the community is amazing. It's a big help for us filmers, for us filmmakers. And you notice these things about Atlanta has a large film industry now. New Orleans is very big and was even bigger recently. And the reason that kind of happens when people move around and make these movies in different places is because the states offer a tax incentive for filming. And it's part of their tourism department that they help. They give us some tax money back because we're bringing so many people in. We're staying at hotels and we're eating food and we're hiring locals and we're doing all these things. And 2 years ago, Kentucky started a filmmaking tax incentive, and it's really great because Kentucky's gorgeous. It is a huge corn-producing state, and it's close to me, which is great. I can get in my car and be up there in 2 hours and kind of be in the world of the movie. So right now, we're basing it in Kentucky, and that's the plan.
Got something in front of you for a while, and in the meantime, people don't have to wait to see the long version of the film that you're doing. They can see a short right now, can't they?
They can. Yes, we just, like you said, it played at the Tribeca Film Festival, which was great. I think it screened maybe 3 or 4 times there. Unless you were there, that was the only place to see it until today. We released it publicly online. So you can go to our website, which is silothefilm.com. And you can watch the 10-minute documentary on there. You can contact us, let us know what you think. There's also some information on grain entrapments themselves, some research behind it, and that's where we're going to update the public as the feature film develops. So that website will eventually be the website where you go to watch the trailer for the feature film. It's hosted on Vimeo.com, which for me is great. It's kind of a more professional, tasteful version of YouTube, I think, but they released the video today as a staff pick, which is really cool. That means Vimeo as a company really liked it and got behind it and helped promote it.
So if they just go online and Google Silo Edge of the Real World, they'll find their way to Vimeo then?
They will, or you can just go to silothefilm.com and video is right on the homepage there.
Well, Marshall, I think a lot of us appreciate your drawing attention to a part of farming that's too often overlooked, but also in the kind of the heart and soul of a farming community. And we look forward to you doing it again. I wonder if you're going to have more of those in your career. And I also wonder how people can encourage more film production about food and farming.
Right. I think they should. I think one of the reasons I'm attracted to telling stories about communities like this is because these are the type of people that aren't looking for attention. A lot of movies get made about people that want movies made about them. The farming community are very hardworking, humble people who, the majority of ones that I've been around, love what they do and love their way of life, but they're not looking for outside validation to tell them that, you know, they're doing it the way they should. So I don't think it's a community that's going out saying, please come make a movie about us. That's what I'm really excited about, is these are stories that deserve to be told for very humble people. So I think it's going to be really up to some other filmmakers to be hungry to tell some of these stories, because I think the people are living a great way of life, and they're not going to, you know, they're not going to go to L.A. and beg for a movie to be made about them. That's not important to them, and I think that's, you know, I think that's beautiful.
Well, I think it's beautiful what you're doing, and I think we want to thank you, Marshall Burnett, and his film Silo: Edge of the Real World. Marshall, I think we should also thank whoever that NPR reporter was that got your attention years ago and thought this was something you should pursue.
No, absolutely.
It's an idea that can take hold, and you can, like you did, you know, think about it, don't let it go until you can finally make a movie, and you're going to make another movie. So really appreciate your taking the time to share this story with us on Farm to Table Talk.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for talking to me.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.